Welcome to the ULM Forum. I'm Jay Curtis. My guest today, Dr. Eric Panny, is the Associate Provost for Academic Affairs here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Dr. Panny, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jay. It's good to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Some conflicting information in recent weeks on what happens with universities and sabbaticals and what those policies really look like. We wanted to take some time today to talk with you about that and how those sabbaticals impact ULM.
Okay. I'm glad to do that. I did a little bit of background work before I came here so I could bone up a little bit because I didn't know much about the history of sabbaticals. I knew they'd been around for a long time. It turns out that Harvard University was the first university to offer sabbatical leaves. They began that program in 1880. It was a small growth program, and by about 1930, there were 180 or so universities across the country that were offering sabbatical leaves. The concept is one that is, believe it or not, biblically based. I believe it's in Exodus. If you look, you find that under Mosaic law, that farmers could till their fields for 6 years, but on the seventh year, they were supposed to leave them fallow to rest, just like the creation. In the creation story, we have God working for six and resting on the seventh day, the Sabbath.
So sabbatical actually comes from Sabbath.
Right. The roots are with the same word. So the concept that Harvard did was they took that idea of a sabbatical year and applied it to their faculty as a means of professional development so that the faculty taught for 6 years and then on the seventh year, they could take a year off but earn half pay. During that time, they were supposed to rest, recuperate, and develop themselves professionally, academically, acquiring new credentials, writing, teaching at other places, getting new ideas, refreshing themselves.
And if you look at what Harvard University is and has been, that policy obviously helped them.
Sure, it does. It clearly has. And just about every university now in the United States has a sabbatical leave policy. ULM has one, in fact, that if you were to look in the faculty handbook, you would see one in place. It's been several years since we've been able to offer sabbatical leaves to our faculty because the very first statement is that we can only do this when funds are available. And with the cuts higher education has received, you know, in the last several years, we just have not had the funding to do that.
Now, we've also seen there are other forms that a faculty member can take time for research, but those are frequently funded in other ways.
Right. In many cases, people will use the term sabbatical to refer to a leave that a faculty member takes because they've bought out their payment from the university through a grant that they've written while they were teaching. So they put an extra effort in to submit this proposal for to take some time off to work on a book, for example, or to go away and work in somebody's laboratory to acquire new skills. Most people term that a sabbatical, but in fact, in the historical tradition of a sabbatical, the funds are paid by the university themselves rather than being paid by a grant or by another institution.
And when university funds aren't available, they just aren't.
Exactly. And then we just cannot offer that form of leave to the faculty. We have had people that in past years have taken what have been called sabbatical, unpaid sabbatical leaves, which, you know, really that again does not really meet the terms of what a sabbatical leave involves because there is no payment involved in that case, in an unpaid leave. It really is strictly a case of unpaid leave. Probably what's happened in recent years is with the Family and Medical Leave Act, where sabbaticals had been used for rest and recuperation. Now, I would say FMLA is probably being used similarly or in place of sabbatical leaves.
If someone takes time off to care for a parent who's
exactly,
ill or a child.
Right. Maybe they're suffering from exhaustion and their physician feels that they need to take some time off. The university recognizes that, has invested into that person, and doesn't want to lose them, but they want to provide them an opportunity to get that rest that they need so they can come back refreshed. In that case, the person would go on Family and Medical Leave Act leave, take sick leave, and get that rest and recuperation.
So what does that do for someone who actually has a sabbatical or a grant-funded sort of time away for research? What does that do for the faculty member when they come back to the classroom?
Well, the idea of a sabbatical is to give the faculty member an unbroken block of time where they can really immerse themselves in their subject. And I think it, for those of us that have been through graduate programs, there's nothing like taking that year that you're working on your master's degree or the 2 years that you're writing your dissertation, you know, and you're really just, your whole life is devoted to that. When we become faculty members, we don't have that ability anymore. We have to teach.
Because
we have
to serve. That level of focus is valuable.
It's really critical, yeah. You have to, you know, if you remember what faculty members are doing is they're not just conveying information. They're supposed to be creating knowledge as well. So to synthesize that information, first to go to where the resources are may require that you go to England or you go to France or you go to a lab in, I don't know, Los Angeles or something like that. To do experimentations may take several months to set it up, you know, a couple months to actually conduct the experiments, and then you have the data analysis that follows. Or let's say you're working on a book on medieval literature out of England, so you have to go to the British Museum in London. You invest time there. You spend weeks, maybe months, looking at the resources there, gathering all your information, gathering your knowledge. Then you have to synthesize that information, and then the synthesis part is where the creation of knowledge follows that. So having those unbroken blocks of time that are significant are really critical to this process. And that's the only way, especially at a university, a regional institution, where our faculty have the opportunity to take those big blocks of time and make significant research advances. Or in the case of our instructors, for example, to go back to school and earn their terminal degree. Or maybe for somebody involved in the foreign languages, for example, maybe we have somebody who's been a French teacher who's interested in acquiring German now. So he'll go off for 6 months or so and immerse himself in German culture, learn that language, and be able to come back and teach it.
Well, there are really two sides of that. There's the advancement of knowledge that universities are charged with, but there's also what that faculty member brings back to the classroom
when they
do come back.
And whether it's in the case of the language person acquiring a new language, or in the case of the English person or the scientist of developing that knowledge, that information comes back, makes them a stronger faculty member, makes them more up to date in their field. They come back into the classroom and they're a better faculty member for that. And every study that I've seen that has examined the effects of sabbatical leave, it has always shown that the institution gets strengthened by those sabbatical leaves.
Well, let's also talk about, as we go through the budget process for higher education, that's an ongoing thing. There was some money that got diverted from secondary education that will be used to fill some gaps. But still, there is a budget crisis statewide.
Oh, yeah. We're not sure. We don't know exactly the numbers yet that ULM will face as far as losses of funding for 2011, 2012. But minimally, we're looking at something probably around $12 million. And we've been told to have an exercise where we plan for a 35% budget cut, which would move us somewhere into the $20 million range. And out of a $84 million budget, you know, taking $20 million out of it is pretty significant. And when you look at what that means for an institution like us, it's clearly we've skinnied down a lot over the years, and I think we operate fairly efficiently now. We certainly won't be able to fund things like sabbatical leaves anymore under those scenarios.
There have been some numbers thrown around dealing with the percentage of funding that actually ends up in the classroom.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about really what it takes to run the university and how those ratios get
put
together?
Okay. Roughly 80% of the budget for ULM or for any institution is involved in personnel. And if you look at the personnel, if you look at the number of people employed at ULM, about half of them are faculty. So that means 40% of our budget goes directly to paying the people that are in the classrooms. And then if you look at the other 20% that are of the budget that's outside of personnel, I would venture that at least half of that is probably in supporting education, in supporting the classroom instruction, supplies, library resources, probably maybe even more than half of it. So I would I feel very confident that I can tell you that at least half of every dollar that comes into ULM goes directly to the classroom.
And that money certainly bears fruit. Also, recently in the news and in on public radio, Marketplace, produced by American Public Media, had a story featuring ULM's education curriculum redesign.
Right. And talking about bearing fruits, there's a very good example. The alternative certification programs that have developed in the colleges of education over the past several years have proved to be very successful, at least in our case. And what these programs do is they take people who already have college degrees and they work with them and educate them about the education process, about the learning process, so that they then are prepared to go into the elementary, secondary, and high school classroom and be good teachers. Well, the concept was tested, and we've been measured now for about 3 years, I believe it is. And in each of those 3 years, the people that have graduated from our alternative certification, our MAT program, have gone out into the workforce and gotten jobs in elementary, middle, and high schools, have been found to be at least as, and in most cases, more effective than the experienced teachers that have been out there teaching already for a number of years. So you can take an 18-month period, and take that person, run them through one of these MAT programs, and over those 18 months, the person that comes out of that is a very effective teacher, perhaps more effective than somebody who's been out there for teaching for 10 or 15 years.
Well, I've heard that the program significantly increased the number of hours that a teacher spends in the classroom before they actually start the student teaching process.
Right, because what these people are doing is they start off with a summer of intense study on campus. Then they spend a year, an academic year, in the classroom. So they're actually being exposed to that teaching. They're doing on-the-job training, so to speak, with a mentor who supervises them while they're taking additional college classes. And then they finish up the next summer with another set of very intensive on-campus courses over that summer. So there's that 18 months where they get sandwiched in there. They're getting a huge amount of experience teaching in the classroom where they have experienced teachers supervising and working with them, plus they get the theory behind the education process.
Also, a big weekend coming up here on campus before the Thanksgiving holiday, football on Saturday, and it's also Parents' Day.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be an exciting time this weekend. It looks like the weather should be pretty nice, and so it's our next to last home game. It's critical that we win these two games to become bowl eligible, and we want to win the Sun Belt Conference. So we're excited about it, and it's always great to have the parents come on campus, too. Last summer when we were walking around the Grove, I got to meet several of the parents for students that were in my classes, and it's just really nice to make that connection with them.
And the chili cook-off starts at 9 o'clock Saturday morning.
Right. And, you know, if you've never eaten chili at 9 o'clock in the morning, boy, it's an experience, let me tell you. But it's always fun. People just are so intense about this competition. They invest a lot of time because they're out there. They have to start this from scratch. And they're out there early in the morning. They're probably putting several hours in before we get to sample the chili. And it's a whole variety of different kinds of chilies and real tasty. So we're looking forward to seeing lots of people out in the Grove. We need to have the people out there to support that team, help them win.
So that kickoff time at 2:15 on Saturday in Malone Stadium. Also, things don't stop. On Sunday, our own ULM's own Miss Louisiana, Kelsey Crane, has her trunk show at Pete and Harn Recital Hall, too.
Right. So if sports aren't your thing and fashion is, there's another opportunity to come out on campus this weekend.
Because it's something like just a little over 2 months before she competes for Miss America
in Las Vegas. Our second Miss Louisiana in a row, a ULM student.
Dr. Eric Panny is Associate Provost for Academic Affairs here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Dr. Panny, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jay. It's always a pleasure.
Comments or questions about the show can be emailed to woodard@ulm.edu or send them to ULM Forum, care of KEDM Public Radio, 250 Stubbs Hall, 401 Bayou Drive, Monroe, Louisiana, 71209. Podcasts of the ULM Forum are available online at kedm.org in the listening room.